Good morning, welcome back. It is wonderful to see everybody. We are going to be learning today on a fascinating topic. The topic is seeing is believing. We had the tremendous privilege of being in the land of Israel for the last almost 3 weeks. And so I wanted to reflect on some of those, some of the ideas that I learned personally, not academically, but actually in a tangible way of being in the land of Israel. I wish upon everybody the opportunity to go to Israel, to experience what it is like to be there, and to really see every place that you go is a place which is filled with history. So let's go back to a model. I'd like to start off with a model which starts really actually 800 years ago, and then use that as the model of the way that we are going to experience this. So it starts off with actually this coin. This coin over here, which I'm going to just pass around, if we could just make sure to get it back. This is a coin which is found all the way around Israel, which is actually an enlarged copy of it. It's made in silver, so it's a little heavier than it is. This coin over here, you can see, is a coin which has on the one side a plate, like a bowl-like image, and on the other side it's got sort of like a, looking like it's a flower, almost like, you know, a fleur-de-lis. It may look like a pomegranate, that's a good guess. It's not what it is, actually, but this is what is said, and you'll notice that there is an inscription around the top of it in a language which does not seem familiar. This is a coin which was discovered by none other than the Ramban Nachmanides 800 years ago when he was forcibly exiled from the land of Spain after a public disputation with a Pablo Cristiani in Aragon. He was, after publishing the transcript of his success, he was exiled from Spain, arrives in the late 70s in the land of Israel, and he says the following: Berchani Hashem ad kosh shezachisi uvasi la'ako. I've come to the holy port city of Akko, and umatzasi shom biyad ziknei ha'aretz matbea kesef mefutach pituchei chosom. I found a silver coin which has got engravings upon it. Mitzidoya echad ke'ein makel shokade. The one is a flowering staff. Umatzidoya sheni ke'ein tzluchis is a plate. There's a very clear script around these images. However, I couldn't read it, but I gave it to the locals who read it immediately. Why could they read it immediately and he couldn't? Because it was actually in Hebrew, but it was in Ksav Ivri, the previous Hebrew script, as described in the Gemara. There was a switch in the Hebrew script. We use what's called Ksav Ashuri today, the letters that we teach and know. But there was another script of Hebrew which predated it, and that's the script that we're looking at on this coin. Kihu Ksav Ivri Asher Nishala Kutiyim Kumoishim Muzkar B'Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Dav Chof Amud Beis describes how Ezra switched the scripts. There's a three-way debate as to which happened first and what happened, what was the progression. V'koru min atzada echad shakel hashkalem. The one side says this is a shekel of the shkalim. Minatzad hasheni, Yerushalayim hakadosha. The other side says Jerusalem, the holy Jerusalem. V'omrim ki hatzurois makloi shel Aaron shkediyah purachel. So the images of that flowering entity is not a pomegranate per se, although it does look very close to that, but it is the staff of Aaron, which was flowering. V'hatzurah shenis tzintzena saman. The other one is the container of the man. Both of these lived where? In the Holy of Holies, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. These are two entities which were placed in the Holy of Holies, and they were put onto the shekel. V'shakalnu oisa b'shulchanos uv'mishkola asara kesef istralinis. So it was it was 10 of the Italian mark of silver. V'heim chatzi l'ukya shizkiru Rabbeinu Shlomo. And this comes out to be the weight of the shekel as is described by Rabbeinu Shlomo. Who's Rabbeinu Shlomo? Rashi. Happens to be the Ramban had a debate with Rashi as to what the weight of the shekel was. So he says, I weighed it. And guess what? Rashi was right. So you can't do much better than resolving a machlokes by arriving in Israel and understanding the consequences of seeing it himself. And the words of Rabbeinu Shlomo of Rashi were given a great accreditation because of this. So now, just to appreciate this, now we've learned this together a number of times, but it's so important just to appreciate Ramban's integrity over here. Number one is that there are different camps of people. And so I thought it was so important to do this share. I spoke to somebody after one of my trips last week, and I came back there with more of the Haredi persuasion. And I described, you know, I'd been to all these places, and their comment was, how do they even know that those places are really the real places? And then before waiting to have the answer to the question, they just walked off. And so there's one attitude to discoveries in the land of Israel that we have today is who cares and who knows, and walk off. And that was not what the Ramban did. The Ramban apparently was not of such a persuasion, because the Ramban was willing to acknowledge that he had found something which he had never seen before, and he was willing to acknowledge that it had veracity. And it was therefore willing to be part of his system, so much so that he relinquished his perspective on the measurement of what the Chatzi Shekel is. But on the other hand, the Ramban does not say, as perhaps other camps would say, when you spend a long time with archaeologists, archaeologists have very definite ideas about certain things. And those definite ideas sometimes run contrary to traditions that we have. The Ramban doesn't say, this is definitely the Shekel. He says, Nistayu dira Rabbeinu Shlomo. Rashi has a very good proof over here, which means to say, is it the absolute truth? The answer is, it is true, but it's not the truth. And the Ramban's intellectual, we'll call it honesty, proved to be true because many other shekels were found and there were different weights at different times. So therefore, yes, the shekel he found was in support of Rashi's opinion, but it was not the only shekel which is to be found. So I'd like to continue Lahavdil on the derech of the Ramban. This is a model of the shekel. It's not the shekel in silver, but this is a model of the one that he found. It's a very clear one, as could be seen. But but I'd like to carry on that and sort of add a few reflections of a few places that I and the family had an opportunity of being at the last 3 weeks, and understand them from the perspective of the Ramban, of understanding how it augments our perspective on Judaism. So the first place over here we go to is a place we were at last Tuesday, which is Shiloh. Shiloh is a city in the territory of northern Binyamin Ephraim area, and it is. If you follow Route 60, Route 60 is the biblical highway, Derech Avos. Route 60 leads, if you're moving downwards, from Shechem to Shiloh to Beis El to Yerushalayim to Beersheva. To Hebron to Beersheva, that's the biblical route. It's called Route 60. Today it's a complex road, unfortunately, because it is shared with some of Achenu B'nai Yishmael, and it is a very dangerous place to be, unfortunately. Yeah, so it used to run through Ramallah until they sidestepped it. So it's very complicated. It's a complicated road, and you're on the road with folks with the green license plates, and you don't want to stop too much, although we did stop off at Kikar Tapuach and Kikar Shechem to give the soldiers some roglach, which was wonderful, to say thank you to the many soldiers who surround these Kikarim. You, unfortunately, they're in the news too often. But be it as it may, we visited the holy city of Shiloh. And you ask yourselves, does the Torah talk about Shiloh? And the answer is yes, actually, in yesterday's parasha, in Parashas Re'eh. The Torah tells us there's an important command, and that is that Uloi Sasun Ken Hashem Elokeichem, don't do such to God. What is that you shouldn't do such? One explanation is reading that as the introduction to the following psukim, where it says, Ki im el ha-makom, in source 2, pasuk hey, Ki im el ha-makom asher yivchar Hashem Elokeichem, michol shivteichem, losim es shemo yisham, leshich no sidru shu vasa shama. Where should you bring your karbanos? The place I'm going to tell you. There's going to be a place where you're going to seek out, and it'll be, where is that place? And it goes and describes all the carbonates that need to be brought there. Don't just sacrifice whatever you want to, like we do today in the desert. He says, because we have not yet arrived at the resting place or the inheritance, says the Torah, Asher Hashem Lekecha Noisenloch, which Hashem is going to be giving to you, says Moshe Rabbeinu. Beautiful. What is Menucha and what is Menachla? Says the Gemara in Zvachim, Kuf Yotesom Abayis, Amud Aleph. This refers to two places. Menucha, resting place, refers to Shiloh, where the Mishkan would stand, and Nachla, inheritance, refers to the Beis HaMikdash, where the Beis HaMikdash would stand. How long did the Beis HaMikdash last, at least the first one?
410.
410 years. How long was the Mishkan in Shiloh? 369. Just to understand, the Mishkan was almost the same length of time in Shiloh as the Beis HaMikdash was in Yerushalayim. Just understand the perspective. Sometimes we miss that because we read Yoshua and Shoftim and we think those are the small books. No. Yoshua and Shoftim took up almost 400 years until the point of the Beis HaMikdash, which was the next 400 years, which is Shmuel Aleph Beis, Menachem Aleph, Menachem Beis. Just to appreciate the time frame. So Shiloh is a very consequential place. You say, well, why isn't the Torah a little more explicit? So why doesn't the Torah say, instead of Menucha and Nachla, the coding, just tell us, Shiloh and Yerushalayim? So Rambam says in Moreh Nevuchim, three reasons. Rambam says, very basic reasons, and that is, first of all, if we'd known where we were going, then all the Jews would have killed each other as to who was going to get the Mishkan and then the Beis Hamikdash in their territory. But no more than that is the moment that the people know that something is special to Judaism. Guess what they do? They build churches and mosques on it, and they destroy it, and they don't let the Jews in. And that's been the situation throughout all of history. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "There's going to be this place, but I'm not going to tell you exactly where it is. When you conquer it, then I will tell you. When you are worthy, having conquered it, I'll tell you where it is." What is one of those places? One of those places is Shiloh. Just by a show of hands, who has visited Shiloh? Just over there. Okay, fantastic, good. And if you have not visited yet, you should. It is really worthwhile, and do it with a tour guide, because it's really, really worthwhile to do it. But here's the fascinating thing. The Mishkan in Shiloh is not what the Mishkan looked like in the Midbar. It is funny that our image of what a Mishkan looks like is all those images because we learned in school, Baruch Hashem, Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh. So we have the image of the Mishkan. That was very nice and lasted for just about 40 years, and that's fantastic. But that's not what the Mishkan looked like in Israel. The Gemara in Zevachim tells us in source 4, it says, Bo l'shiloi nesra abamos, when the Mishkan, after 14 years of conquest and settling on the land of Israel, then the Mishkan was established in Shiloh. V'lohoya sham tikra elo beis avonim bilvad milamata v'yirios milamana. Didn't have a roof. What it was it was walls of stone covered by the curtains of the Mishkan. So they replaced the movable krashim, the beams, that they had to put on wagons in order to move from place to place in the desert, and they supplanted them with permanent stone, but they had the yirios, the curtains above them as well. So here, actually, if you take a look on the top of the next page, is a rendition. Today we do colored sources just because it happens to be that you need, there's a lot of details we need to appreciate here. There's a rendition from the Temple Institute over here of the Mishkan as it stood in Shiloh, a stone structure with the curtains draped upon the top, pegged down on the sides. It's fascinating if you have the opportunity of visiting Shiloh, they have a beautiful shul there, which is made in the shape of the Mishkan. It is the main shul. There are five shuls in Shiloh. The main shul in Shiloh is actually patterned after the Mishkan. You could visit, this is the picture I took last week, of the front and the side of the shul as well. It's made to look like what the Mishkan looked like when it was in Shiloh itself. So you say, wait a second. Okay, so let's go back to my conversation with the person of the Haredi persuasion. Now, let's pretend they were interested in the answer, right? So how do you know that this is the place? I mean, like, how in the world do you know this? So the answer is, there's a lot of reasons why we know this. The first actually is it comes back to the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim. Because the Rambam says, if the non-Jews were to know what is special to us, guess what they're going to do? They're going to take it. And that's what happened in every single Jewish holy site. So the Byzantians put a church over there, and we have an inscription right there, right next to the area where it is, which says, God protect Shiloh. It's actually written in over there in Greek, right next to Tel Shiloh, the old Shiloh. So the Christians from 2,000 years ago, they knew where Shiloh was. They were quite happy with that. Just to appreciate that's number one. But then the Christians are the newcomers, right? The Byzantines are the newcomers. Then you can start looking and seeing the walls of the Canaanite walls, the Jewish walls built upon each other, the conquest of Shiloh, the grain houses, artifacts found from those ages, all dating back to a specific time of the times of Yehoshua ben Nun and the conquest. But be it as it may, there's even more. We know that this is Shiloh. We know that from time immemorial this is Shiloh. The question just really is where in the ancient Shiloh is the Mishkan? Where would they have put it? So it turns out that there's a helpful episode which will give us a little bit of clarity. I really, really highly suggest that everybody takes the moment to visit. It's a large, large area, ancient Shiloh. The new Shiloh, which is the Yishuv, is built on the hill, just overlooking it. It comes down, but it's a beautiful plateau area on top of a hill. And a few incidents are very helpful in trying to understand what was going on over there. One incident is the actual destruction of Shiloh. What does that mean, the destruction of Shiloh? The Mishkan was lost. It started with the loss of the Aron. What happens is, at the times of the Eli, at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, we know that the Plishtim come to fight against the nation of Israel at this point in time. The Plishtim are not germane to the land of Israel. They are, as perhaps their namesake also today, but the Plishtim were a seafaring people from the area of Cyprus who came upon they tried to attack Egypt, were pushed off by the Egyptians. The Egyptians have a record of pushing away the Plishtim. They land in the Gaza area on the coast, and they make their way up northwards. They come to attack the Israelites who are primarily living in the mountain areas. This is the heartland of Israel, what the world would call the West Bank, what we call Yehuda and Shomron. So that's where Israel is. Shiloh is in Shomron. And they wage war at the meridian between the mountains and the coastal plains. That's where they attack. And the nation of Israel sends out an army, and they lose the war. They lose 4,000 troops in one day. Just try to put those numbers into scale. We're not talking about bombs and bullets. We're talking about swords, knives, and spears, right? So that's a very significant loss on a day in battle. They come back to the camp at Afek, which is where they are encamped, Ebenezer, which is where they are encamped, and they say, what should we do? They say, you know what we should do? We should bring the Aaron out into battle against the wishes of Eli HaKohen, who is the Shofet at the time and the Kohen Gadol. They go bring the Aaron out into the camp. They get very excited when they see the Aaron there. They think they're going to win this battle. The Plishtim say, get worried. They're going to lose this battle. They say, let's be strong. They go out into battle, and again, the nation of Israel loses. They lose 30,000 people in that battle the next day. Just to put things in perspective, how many soldiers and people victims of terror have there been since since the establishment of the State of Israel? How many people in Yom HaZikaron do we mourn for?
1,000.
About 24,000. Okay, so the soldiers are 24,000 of these right now. Actually, that should be the end. But that's over the course of 75 years. We talk about on one day 30,000 people. This is a very significant loss. The Aaron HaBris is captured. Eli's children, Chofni and Pinchas, who are the Kohanim in his stead, are killed on this day, as was predicted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because of his lax attitude in parenting and their misbehavior as people of authority. And then we hear the following in source 5. Vayorats vayish mibinyamin miar maracha vayavosh shiloi bayamahu mimado kruim vadamal roshoi. There's a man who comes back to the battlefield. He's from the tribe of Binyamin. He's in a state of mourning. He's got ripped clothes. He's got earth on his head. Vayavoy hinei eli yoshev ala kisei yach derech mitzapeh ki haya liboy chored ala aron elokim. And Eli is watching. He's watching in that direction to try to see what's going to happen from the battlefront. Vayish bo lagid bo ir atizak kol ha'ir. And then the messenger first enters the city. The city starts crying out. He asks, why is everybody in Shiloh crying out? And he comes and tells Eli, hears the news. He hears the news of the loss of his sons, the loss of the people, and the capture of the Aaron. When he hears about the capture of the Aaron, he falls backwards off his chair. He's 98 years old at this point in time, breaks his neck, and dies. A very terribly sad thing that goes on at this point in time. Here's the interesting thing. You will notice that the messenger does not first come to Eli. He comes first to the city of Shiloh. He hears the people crying out in Shiloh, then the messenger comes to him. Well, if you're standing in the area of where the Mishkan is, where they assume the Mishkan is today, you will notice that it is not possible to get to it if not through the city. It is made, if you take a look on page 6, where on the top over there, the city of Shiloh is essentially surrounded by mountains. There's one access route, which is off to the left, and the tabernacle is steeply on an escarpment. It is a flat area on the side, but there's an escarpment around it, which prevents anybody from coming up directly to that area if it would not be through the city first, which makes a lot of sense. They would build the Mishkan in a protected area. Fascinating observation in terms of understanding how the messenger would enter the city only from the left side over here. If you want to sort of take a look at this just from a topographical perspective on page 5, Shiloh is on the right-hand side in this map over here in Heartland Israel. That's up on the Route 60 over there. Israel had traveled westwards towards the coastal plain, which is where the battle was in Afek. That's where they fought the Plishtim. That's where they lost the Aaron. The messenger was coming back, walking eastwards. You can stand on Tel Shiloh, see the eastward route, and realize that the person can't come up to Shiloh from the eastward route, would have to enter Tel Shiloh, the area where the Mishkan was, though the city was before coming into the Mishkan. But there's more than that. What's fascinating is that anytime you build in Israel, you have to bring in the antiquity society, especially in older areas, because you never know what you're going to uncover when you're making the foundations for your new house. There's a lot of, this is how the most fascinating finds have been made. So the area of Tel Shiloh is actually, if you visit the area, is actually not on the tallest mountain. In fact, it's on a hilltop, and there's a flat area where the Mishkan stood on the side of it, as is clear over here. But it is not the highest mountain. In fact, most of the mountains around it are higher. And Shiloh itself, the new city of Shiloh, which is a beautiful, magnificent place, is built on the hilltop just above where the Tel Shiloh was in the old place. Here's the fascinating thing. As they were trying to build a new road, they discovered that there was a little wall found on the top of the ridge overlooking Mishkan. Thank you so much. And on this wall, they found something fascinating. They found that it wasn't a large wall, but they found that there was lots of broken shards of pottery on the one side, but not on the other side. They couldn't figure out what the deal is. Why all the pottery on the one side? So they went to the Rabbi Yishuv, and they said to him, "Do you know what this is?" And he started dancing, and he said, "That's fantastic." So what did he do? Why? Because if you remember, if you go back to that it's actually a Mishnah in Zvachim on page three, source four, the Gemara, or it's actually the Mishnah says, that's what was called Menucha in the Pasuk in Re'eh, is the resting place. He says the following, says the Mishnah, if you ate kodesh, you need to eat it within the curtains, within the perimeter of the Mishkan. When you brought kodesh kalim or ma'aser sheni, you could eat it in kol aroy. This is unlike Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, you had to eat within the walls of Yerushalayim. In Shiloh, you do not need to eat in the walls of Yerushalayim. You needed to eat it within what's called visual distance of the Mishkan. Kol Haroi was the idea. You know what's fascinating about that ridge where they found that wall? Over beyond that ridge was where they could no longer see Shiloh. Why were there broken shards of pottery? What did they use the pottery for? Eating their korbanos. Can you cleanse pottery? No, because there are particles which are absorbed into the walls of the pottery. Why were they breaking the pottery on the one side? It's because they couldn't take Kodshim Kalim outside of Kol Haroya. That wall was not a defensive wall. That wall was a demarcation wall of Kol Haroya. And lo and behold, they checked all the adjoining mountaintops and there was a little wall with pottery on the one side and no pottery on the other side. All cross-navigating to one place, which is where? Mishkan Shiloh. So you have to appreciate just the significance of this of these places. It's really worthwhile seeing what's going on. You understand the Mishnah in a much more sophisticated context now when understanding this perspective. There's so much to appreciate. Let's move on a little bit.
But they had the remnants 2,000 years later.
It's all there. It's all there. You just need to go down deep enough to be able to appreciate this. Let's go a little weiter. We then went to Yerushalayim. Again, a misconception, folks. Where is Yerushalayim? It's an amazing thing. Most people have no idea where Yerushalayim is. But let's appreciate this. What we say today is Yerushalayim, the ancient city, the old city of Jerusalem, the old city, that's nonsense. The old city is the new city. That's all new business. That was not what Yerushalayim was at the times of David HaMelech. We deeply appreciate all the Mamelukes and all their walls and everything like that. But that was not where Yerushalayim stood. So let's appreciate it in context where Yerushalayim was. We hear in Sefer Shmuel that the first act that David HaMelech does as king of all of Israel, David HaMelech was the king of Hebron for 7 years of Yehuda, for 7.5 years. He then, Ishbosheth, is murdered. Israel comes to invite David HaMelech to be the king of all of Israel. He comes to be king of all of Israel. The first act as a king of all of Israel is Yerushalayim. In source 6, Ben Shloshim Shana David Malchoy, Ba'arba'im Shana Malach, he was 30 years old when he became king. Always gives me a little bit of a chizuk there. You know, people say, "Rabbi, how could you be so young?" I was like, "What happened to all the young rabbis before they became old?" But David HaMelech was the king at 30 years old, right? So David HaMelech was very young at the age of kingship. Bechevron Malach al Yehuda sheva shanim v'shisha chodeshim. Yerushalayim Malach shloshim v'shalosh shana al kol Yisrael v'Yehuda. So he was the king of Israel in Yerushalayim. Vayelech HaMelech v'anashov Yerushalayim el Yavusi yoshev ha'aretz v'yemer l'David lemor lo yisol v'hena ki'im hesircha ivrim ha'pischim lemor lo yavoy David hena. And they called off the ramparts and they said to him, "You can't conquer the area of Yavus because unless you remove these ivrim and pischim." Vayilkod David is Mitzurat Zion, he ir David, he conquered Mitzurat Zion, the stronghold of Zion, one of the mountains is called Zion. Vayomer David bayamahu kol makei Yavusi v'yigab etzinor el ha'pischim el ivrim. David HaMelech makes a proclamation. He says, anybody who can capture the Yavusi and touch the Tzinor and remove these Ivrim and Pisrim that I hate, then will conquer the land of Jerusalem. Very hard to understand what he's talking about. What is the HaMelech? These Ivrim, these Pisrim, this Tzinor, this whole business, it's not so easy to understand. So there's a lot of discussions as to what's going on over here. Why was David HaMelech's first move? The Malbim says the reason why he chose this as his first conquest was because this is the only city that, first of all, Shmuel had already told him there's something special about this area. But also says the Malbim is that he wanted a place that was international, that was between different tribes, And this was a place that was on the meridian between Binyamin and Yehuda. And this was a place which would unite both the children of Rachel and the children of Leah. Remember Shelah being in the children of Ephraim, of Rachel, now coming to Yehuda. So this is the, we'll call, international city as it is even today. So Yoav manages to do this. But the question is, what actually is going on over here? This, we discussed this in previous times beforehand. But let's just appreciate what's going on over here. So the first explanation which is given is the Ralbag describes that they had the system. There was a mechanized system, which was a water created system, where they had these guards which would mechanize by water flow, which would make it impossible, sort of like we'll call drones today, you know, people-less a military, which made it much harder for people attacking it, because you could lose casualties in these guards of swinging swords and spears, which would mechanize by water. So he says that Sinor is the pipeline which would animate these Ivrim and Piskin, these blind and lame people, because they're not really blind and lame people, they aren't people, they're mechanized soldiers on the ramparts guarding all the doors. So David Melech says, if you could touch the Tsinar, the pipeline which leads to these to this mechanized army, that will allow to stop the system, allow us in and to succeed. That's one suggestion which the Ralbag suggests as well. Again, the Ralbag lived in France. Gersonides. He did not have the opportunity of ever making it to Israel. Another explanation, which is interesting, is if you read through Josephus Flavius in his descriptions here in the Antiquities of the Jews, he describes this area and says that they were placing literally their lame and their blind on the walls. Why? So one way of understanding this is that he was essentially saying is, we're so strong, we have a wall, there's no need for us to even fight. We can even put up the weakest in society and you will not succeed. Another possibility of understanding what Josephus is saying, and is fascinating, which is unfortunately haunts us till today, is that we're using civilian casualties, using our morality against ourselves, which is we'll put our blind and our lame on the wall, David HaMelech, you won't be able to conquer this area. But, and there's a very famous Radak, which is very connected, very beautiful idea, where he describes that even in the Piskim of images of Yaakov and Yitzhak Avinu, because of the covenant that Avraham made with Avimelech, intergenerationally between the Plishtim and the inhabitants of the land and Avraham Avinu, that for three generations they would not fight with each other, and they apparently had still somebody who was left over from one of the, we'll call, child of the old age of Avimelech, who was still there, and they were essentially putting up the images of this covenant that you can't attack us. That was what was being put on the walls as well. This explanation does not address what is this Tsinor, what is this exactly. But when you discover and you work out what Yerushalayim is, then you can appreciate it. So let's go back to where Yerushalayim is. If you go to the old city of Yerushalayim today and you walk out of the Shar HaShpot, you look down the hill, that's an area called Silwan. Silwan actually just means Shiloach. It's the Greek version which the Arabs adopted for themselves, as they do in most cultures, adopt the previous culture. It was a special place. The Byzantians put a church over there. They made a mosque on the church because they tried to the church was trying to absorb Judaism, and then the Muslims tried to absorb the Christians. But nonetheless, that's in Silwan. Silwan for many years was a very dangerous neighborhood, well, with many Arabs, and in fact it still is a hotbed of terrorists. The terror attack which took place two weeks ago on Motzei Shabbos, just actually a few feet from where we were standing, a few hours before that, after we left from the Kotel after doing sort of shlishes there, they went to Silwan, went straight down the mountain into Silwan. But we call it Ir David. And in fact, there are over 70 Jewish families living in Ir David today, and it is one of the greatest gold mines of archaeology. Why? Because that is where Yerushalayim was. In fact, if you look at it, just take a look on page 9 over here, where you see the old city of Yerushalayim. There's the Temple Mount. That's where Shlomo HaMelech made the temple at the top of Yerushalayim. But going down the hill towards the Kidron Valley, that swath of land is what's called Ir David. That was Yerushalayim. That was where the Yevusi held the city. That is what David HaMelech conquered. And it is the we'll call it the least steep way up to Har Habayis, which makes sense, which is where David HaMelech made Yerushalayim. In fact, they've uncovered the area at the top of the mountain below Har Habayis, which is where they assumed David HaMelech had his palace. A large, large area dating back specifically to the times of David HaMelech, because the way it works is that there is ruins upon ruins upon ruins. Because every time Yerushalayim was destroyed, Yerushalayim was conquered 44 times. Just to be aware of this, every time they did not simply excavate and make new foundations, they covered up the previous level of destruction and built on that. So if you uncover layer upon layer upon layer, you find civilization after civilization after civilization. They come down to the bedrock and they found the foundations of David HaMelech's palace right over there. In fact, on the 5-shekel coin, that insignia, you know, the top of that that curlicue, that is the top of the pillar which is found in David HaMelech's palace as the sign of the symbol of the Malchus David. Just to appreciate, that was found there in Eretz David. I would highly recommend, I don't think you can go to Israel without doing a tour in Eretz David. It will reshape your perspective of Yerushalayim. You cannot go it's an amazing thing. In the city as well, there are amazing things that have been discovered, but as an example, I'm just going to send this around as well. This is a seal called a bula, which was found. This is actually a replication, which is, I did not get to take the original out of the Israel Antiquities Museum, but it was actually smaller than it. It's about 1 centimeter in diameter. And upon that, they actually misread it at the beginning. It says, Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. Which means to say that this is one of the most significant finds they found in Eretz David, which means to say they found the actual seal of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. This is obviously on some documentation, which what they do is they put some clay there, they would stamp the clay with the insignia. That is Chizkiyahu HaMelech. You'll notice over there that there's a sun disk with wings, right? That's actually an ancient Egyptian insignia, which is a reference to God and life. It is not with the trappings of paganism, but it was used by many kings at the time to indicate life. It suggests that Chizkiyahu HaMelech adopted this symbol after he recovered from his illness, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu re-granted him life. But this became the insignia of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Just to appreciate, this is all over here found in Eretz David. Every stone over there has an incredible amount of history. Now, to appreciate this, why did Yavusi build Yerushalayim right here? And the answer is, it's a little bit off the main highway, off the 60s, a little bit into the mountains. The answer is for a very simple reason, because of
water.
They built it because of water. They didn't know this. David HaMelech chose Yerushalayim because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him about this, but the Yavusi before him chose this area because of water. Why? Because there are a number of springs in the valley around this area. In fact, most notably over here, the most important spring which supplies Yerushalayim is a spring called the Gihon Spring. Okay, there is another spring down the road called the Ein Rogel. If you remember the beginning of Sefer Melachim Aleph, there's a dispute between Adoniah and Shlomo Melech as to who's going to be king. Adoniah is doing his whole ceremony at Ein Rogel. It's down around the corner. It's a smaller spring. And then Shlomo Melech is coronated at the Gihon. And Moshe Kemet Melachim Al Mayam, that you only anoint kings by as the Gemara says in Horius and Christus. And so there were a number of springs surrounding this area. So you say the following. Let's appreciate what this is. If you go down into the old city, into the old Yerushalayim, the real Yerushalayim, where Yerushalayim stood on the side of the mountain, then there's actually a fascinating old cavern which goes beneath the old Yerushalayim, and we're not talking about Chizkiyahu tunnel. We'll get that in a moment. This is an old cavern. This was called the Yavusi, the Canaanite tunnel. If you take a look on page 11, they've uncovered it, and you can go walk through it today. From the old Jebusite city wall, There is a way down. You go underneath the rock. It's carved out in the rock, whether it's natural, human-made, or humanly augmented. And it goes down under the mountain. And apparently they used to send their children to do this, to go get water. I don't know what child protective services would say, because it's not such a simple walk, let me tell you. And there was no wooden steps as they are today. But they come down to a shaft which overlooks where the Gihon used to be, the Gihon spring, and they would lower their buckets or their jars into it. They would pull them up, walk back in the spring up to the mountain. So what's just fascinating is the Yavusi made their wall halfway up where Yerushalayim is, in what's called Eretz David today. But the spring was at the bottom of the mountain, which is where the spring emits. What did they do? They made a protective area above where the spring was. And then essentially when David HaMelech was coming to Yerushalayim, he sees the city of Yavus. He knows it's Yerushalayim. He sees the city wall that they're pretty confident about. Why they're confident? Because their water source is underground. But he sees another fortification at the bottom of the mountain, right? How did they discover this, by the way? Because they're building a visitor center for Eretz David, and they discovered the spring. They said, wait a second, we're not making the visitor center over here. So once you start building, that's when you realize all these things. So David HaMelech says, "Mi yigav betzinor." What does tzinor mean today in modern Hebrew? Literally means a pipe, right? In other instances in Tanakh, is an indication that it's a place for a flow of water. What was David HaMelech essentially saying? Is who can capture their access to the Gihon spring, the waterway, which is what will allow them to sustain a siege. And it is very likely that when Yoav was able to capture it, he went through the old water, the old Yevusi tunnel, the Jebusite tunnel, from the Gihon spring up into the city of Yerushalayim, thereby enabling them to be able to capture Yerushalayim. If you don't walk in it, you can't appreciate the significance of what it means. This is something which you can go on a regular Ir David tour and see it. You can see where the Gihon was. We'll get to why it was in a second as well. This is a part of this. It's perhaps easier to see on page 12 from a side angle. There's the horizontal tunnel on the left, which is where people would walk down. They would get to a vertical shaft, which is where people would lower their buckets into the place where the spring was, where the Gihon spring led to the feeder tunnel, and that's how they would get their water into the city of Yerushalayim. And again, seeing is believing, just to appreciate this as well. There's a lot more about the Warren's shaft, just fascinating things, but not for now. Then we move on further. Now, everybody's heard about the Shiloach, right? Because, you know, we all learn Ishbitz Torah, right? Because we all learn the Meir Shiloach. But folks, and everybody should learn Ishbitz Torah, and everybody should learn Rav Liner and his Svarim. But he was not the original Meir Shiloach, right? The Meir Shiloach, the Shiloach, and this is something which I was shocked to be aware of. The Shiloach is described in Tanakh. Yeshayahu describes it, and he says, "Yan kimasa amaze es Meir Shiloach alchim la'atum asoyses retzinu rabbeinu Rav Eliyahu." He's talking about the Northern Kingdom. And he says, "You've rejected the waters of the Shiloach." What is he referring to? It's a metaphor for the house of David HaMelech. And the house of David HaMelech, he says, is a small spring, and rather you want to find all these other great kings, these rapid rivers. He says, you've rejected the Meir Shiloach. This is a metaphor for rejection of Malchus based David turning to the Northern Kingdom. Here's what he says, the Malim says. What is the Shiloach? In source 4, is Meir Shiloach. Hayadarkom nimshoich hamlochim etzel ma'ayna amayim. They used to anoint their kings by the spring. U'malchei David nimshochu etzel Meir Shiloach. U'mayan koto nimshach benachas. So the Shiloach was a spring that was, there was a small spring that was a sign that their kingship should be ongoing. The Malbim never had the opportunity, the zchus of visiting Israel, which is why he stated this, which is incorrect. And this is what I used to think till 2 weeks ago. He used to say, he describes the Shiloach as a spring. The Shiloach is not a spring. Let me just let's appreciate what this is. The Shiloach is talked about everywhere in Mishnah and Gemarah. The Meir Shiloach, as an example, famously we know that the Meir Shiloach was used for many things. It was a mikveh, but it was also a place where the kohen would go, and bring the water for the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. He would go down to the Meir Shiloach, and the Mishnah tells us in Sukkah, Nisach Amayim Ketzat Tzluch Yisholzav Machzek Hashalogim HaMemaleh Min HaShiloach. He'd fill it up from the Shiloach. Shiloach is a place of water. So they would go down to the Shiloach, and they would bring the water, and they would do the libation. What is the Shiloach? This is the critical question. What is the Shiloach? So when Yechizkel HaMelech saw the approaching Assyrian armies, the Assyrians had destroyed the northern kingdom. They had exiled all of the tribes in the north. They had now absorbed the refugees of the north into Jerusalem, into those areas, as is described in Tanakh. Then Sanherib approaches Yehuda, captures the main cities of Judea, Lachish. If you want to read the gory details of the Battle of Lachish and the capture of Lachish. Most of the towns, 90% of Yehuda is captured by Sanherib, the king of Ashur at this point in time. And now Jerusalem is approaching. He knows that the siege is going to happen. We're told in Divrei Yamin Beis, Perek Lamin Beis, Vayar Yechizkiyahu ki bo Sanherib ponov lemilcham al Yerushalayim. He knows that he's going to turn to Jerusalem next. Vayivoetz imsorov v'giborov listomis memeha ma'ayonos asher michutz la'ir vayar. He consulted with his military experts, and they said we should cover up the springs around the city as well. We don't want the besieger to find the water like David HaMelech, who is the besieger, found the water when he captured the city from the Yevusi. Let's not let that happen again, says Yechizkiel. At the end of the parak, V'hu Yechizkiel, so samez motzo me'emei agichon ha'elyon, v'yashrem lamata ma'arovo, li'ir David, v'yatzlach Yechizkiel v'chol ma'aseu. Yechizkiel took the water of the Gihon and he brought it into the city of Deir David into the city of David, which is Yerushalayim, which is what he did. So he blocked up the spring and he brought it in. The mission tells us in Psachim at the end of the fourth parak that there are six things that Chizkiyahu did, three which were approved of and three which were disapproved of. One of the things that were disapproved of was blocking up the Gihon spring. So apparently the Chachamim disapproved of this. It is interesting to notice that in the Avos de Rabbi Nazon there were four things which the Chachamim approved of, and one of them was blocking up the spring. So did they approve? Did they not approve? The Kisei Rachamim, which is the Pirush on the Avos de Rabbi Nazon, written by none other than the Chida, Rabbi Yosef David Azulai, who wrote on everything, including Avos de Rabbi Nazon. The Kisei Rachamim says that there was a dispute. He consulted some sages who said that he should, some sages said he shouldn't. The majority said he should not because Yishayahu said the city will be protected. He didn't rely on them, blocked it up, but ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're right. Meaning, in the end of the day, he is remembered Latov as well, but the Avos de Rabbi Nosson and the Mishnah are indicating that there was a debate as to whether this is the correct way of doing things. Why is the Mishnah? Because the majority of the Chachamim said not. So yeah, you're right. That's a good question. It comes back to the Goran Bar Mitzvah Lo Hashemayim here. How does that work exactly when HaKadosh Baruch Hu seemed to say that this worked? But be it as it may, we actually have the titles of Chizkiyahu, and if you haven't had the chance of going in them, do so. It is worthwhile. You can travel through that. You can go to where the Gihon was, and you can go in the water, walking in the water. It takes about 25 minutes. It's a very long 1,700 feet tunnel underneath Yerushalayim, carved through the rock, into the city of Yerushalayim, into where the bottom of the city of Yerushalayim is, and to see what Yechizkiyahu HaMelech did. In fact, we actually have the description at the entrance, which is now in the museum, where it describes how the two teams of builders, they were working from either end of it, would be able to hear each other through the rock. They could hear the chippings of the axes on each side and how they met each other on either side. If you take a look at this, just to see, get a sense of how it works, on page 15, you can see the windy trail of the movement towards into Yerushalayim from the Gihon on the right-hand side all the way underneath the mountain to the Shilach. And this was how they did it. The question is, how in the world did they do this? They didn't have the tools. How in the world did they know to meet each other? Like, how could they possibly do this? And another question we could ask is, why is it that it's a windy path? Meaning, if they'd gone from as the crow flies, as they say, it would have been only about 1,000 feet. But the way they do it is 1,700 feet because of all the twists and turns. It's a twisty tunnel. So the answer is that was suggested up till recently was because they followed a natural fissure in the rock. There was a crack that they followed through, and they followed that through. That's been disproved. That's been debunked. The science keeps changing. So all the theories keep changing. Within 5 years, it keeps getting updated. Part of the reason is the following. Is that if you want to create a tunnel through rock, one of the best ways to do it is to dig at a right angle degree. So one starts this way, one starts that way, and whichever way you're going to do, you're going to hit each other, right? Right? Because either it'll be like this or be like that. You're going to hit each other somehow because you're guaranteed, as long as you're the right height, you're going to hit each other. However, when it comes to this, you couldn't do it at a full right angle because you come out the side of the mountain. So what did? They did another thing. They went in curves, knowing that the curves would hit each other. How do they know they're the right height? The answer is they didn't. They started the wrong height at the beginning, which is why if you go through the tunnels of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, it starts off very narrow, and you get to the end, it's very tall, because they started too high on the Yerushalayim side. They dug deeper to meet the tunnel in the middle when they did. It's really, really fascinating to appreciate this, the ingenuity. This took the 2 years they were waiting for the siege of Sancheru to Rav Yerushalayim. This is when they created this. Why is this important to us? For many, many, many reasons, because we see what the Torah, the Tanakh says. In reality, you can walk in it. But more than that is that this was what led to what is called the Shilach. This is to appreciate this. The Shilach was not the spring. The Shilach was the pool. At the end of it, people get confused. They talk about the Shilach spring. It was not. It was where the water was led to. And in fact, 14 years, sorry, in the year, I think it was 2008, there was a sewage break at the bottom of Silwan. And whenever there's a sewage break, they have to bring in the antiquity society, especially areas like this. And they found, they were bringing the bulldozer down, and they hit a rock, an old rock, an old stone. And they carried on going. There was another stone above it, and there was another stone above it. There were three steps. And then it was flat. And then there were another three steps. And then they went a little back, and there were another three steps. And they said, wait a second. This is made of the same stone and the same measurements as you find in the southern wall excavations at the top by the old city. And they said, there's something going on over here. And I just inserted a picture I took A couple of weeks ago on page 16, the bottom right, you can see the three steps. It's hard to see because there's a platform behind it and then another three steps. That is the Shiloach. They've discovered the Shiloach. That's the corner of the Shiloach. Turn back to the image on page 15. The area they've discovered of the Shiloach is the bottom right part of that pool. Do you see the groups of groupings of steps? The bottom right of that pool is where they've discovered the Shiloach. And by the way, they're in the process of buying the area next to it so they can now carry on the excavations to uncover the entire Shiloach. The Shiloach was massive. It was a huge pool. As you came into Yerushalayim, then that is, take a look at the top image on page 15. As you came into Yerushalayim, you met the Shiloach first. Then you made Aliyah L'Regel, and you made your way up to Har Abayis. And in fact, you can find the holes in the ground where they put in the lumber, which would hold up the area in which people go to the mikveh, but Tzanua. So people come in, they enter the mikveh, so people were not unclothed publicly, and then continue upwards. This is the beginning of the description. So just to appreciate this, we are now, when they talk about the Meh HaShiloach, it's the water that led from the Gihon spring, which Chizkiyahu HaMelech blocked up in order to enable that they would have water in the city at the same time as not allowing the water to be to the source of the enemy if the outer wall of Jerusalem would be conquered. It's fascinating because before 2008, they thought the little area with a few Byzantine columns, that little pool outside was the Shiloach. That wasn't the Shiloach. That was the remainder. What happened after the destruction of the Shiloach? We're talking about under 15 feet of dirt covered up from destruction after destruction, which is now being uncovered. You can visit it today to appreciate it. Another just on the way.
The machlokes on whether it was appropriate is whether it was inappropriate or
standard. Yes. So Rashi says that the reason is that Yeshayahu told him that the city will be protected, and the question is so do you need to do something to protect it or not? So Chizkiyahu consulted, as you saw in the pasuk, he didn't consult the Chacham, maybe consulted his military strategist who said you should do this. And the Chacham apparently, and the majority said it's enough to rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whereas and some of the other Chacham said, no, this is a necessary piece of Hishtadlus. It comes back to today.
This is the constant issue with Chizkiyahu.
Yes.
Always the balance.
100%. And all these issues. Chizkiyahu made many bold moves. He was, and you should just appreciate, this is the space where Rabbinic Judaism lives. Rabbinic Judaism giving advice to those who are making military and political decisions, and the balance and the tension between those two ideas of power. In fact, we learned a few months ago, we had the opportunity of learning that Gemara about when Yechizkiyahu was sick and Yeshayahu coming to him, the idea of Rabbinic Judaism and political Judaism, and who comes to whom, who bounds to whom, who sets policy. There was part of Rav Kook on the Gemara over there, Brachos Daf Yud. We learned the two forms, were called branches of government in Judaism. Let's go a little further. We're just driving along the road last week, and the tour guide says, wait, stop over here. We're in the middle of Route 60. No, in the middle of nowhere. He says, you see this little path over there? We've got to get out. So I'm like, okay. So we get out, we walk over here, and he says, I want to show you something. So before showing something, just appreciate this. The Gemara, the Mishnah in Bava Basra says, if you're selling land, and you're selling land default, with no clauses, no fine print, what is sold in your land? What attachment to the land is sold? The Mishnah tells us in Source 9, any stones which are found in it for its need, for agricultural needs, are sold with it. All the little branches holding up the vineyards are sold. Of course, you sell the field, you sell anything which is still growing there. It's not like you acquired there, you kept that. If you have a shomera, comes the word shomera, guard, a guarding house of sorts, then which is not made with tit. Tit is lime or cement, right? So a shomera. What is a shomera? So you see it. This is a picture, actually, my son's on the left over there, on the bottom page of page 17, is a shomera. It is essentially a guard house, which is made in the areas of the fields where the terraces are made on the sides of the mountain to feed them. On the left-hand side is a fig tree. There's a pomegranate tree around the back. For 6 months a year, while the farmer was busy farming, they couldn't allow their crops to be taken by animals or two-legged animals who might come to steal them. So they lived in a shomera. It was a two-story house. Actually, I just took a picture on the inside of here looking outwards. And if you look at the roof on the top of page 18, you'll notice that there's not a drop of cement. It was all rocks, still standing for over 2,000 years, and you can go on top of it and you can stand on it. Right? So shomera is, as understood in the Mishnah, is essentially a stone structure there to protect the produce by farmers. Talked about in the Mishnah as to how the sales go. Why is it sold automatically to the field if there's no tit? Because we assume that if it was not extra service given to it, then that was the assumption was by the owner that was part of the field as well. Again, just basics in terms of understanding what was going on in those times. I'm going to leave out the battle of the Greeks and Yehuda Maccabee and the Greeks, which was also just in the valley just below this, because we're going to skip the Hashmonaim era. I want to go to one last piece and close with this today, just because it's so magnificent. The Mishnah in the beginning of Chagiga tells us there's the Machlokes. First Mishnah in Chagiga tells us the Machlokes as to what age children have to be to do Aliyah L'Regel. The Mishnah tells us Hakol Chayavim Beriyah. Everybody needs to go to do Aliyah L'Regel. Chutz Micheresh Shota V'Katan, except for people who have certain drawbacks, certain challenges, and at Katan Tumtum and Draginos Noshim Avodim Shenim Shukrarim V'Chigav Asum Avachal V'Azaken. Somebody cannot walk by the feet. Aizehu katan. What is the age of a young person who doesn't require doing alil regal? Kol shayne yochol irkov al kesefov shol oviv lalalais mirushalayim harabayas. Anybody who cannot go on the shoulders of their parents all the way up to Yerushalayim to harabayas. Direi Beis Shammai. That's what Beis Shammai says. Beis Hillel. I'm says that it's a little messed up in the orientation. Kol shen yachol lechos biyodeshal aviv v'laz lishulaim harabais. Beis Hillel says as long as you can hold their hand and walk them, accompany them up, then that'll be allowed. By the way, who's being more mekel? Who's being more machmer here?
Mekel is probably the Shammai.
So in this case, the mekel is Beis Shammai because he is saying that the child can be young enough to even right on the shoulders, so that's a younger age, right? So maybe you may say it's more machmer because it includes more children, but it's more inclusive in terms of the age of Aliyah Regel. Well, the truth is like this. In 2008, when they discovered after that sewage break, down the bottom of Steel One, the edges of what they realized to be the Shiloach, the Brechas HaShiloach, then they realized and they said to themselves, wait a second, if this is a Shiloach, and this is the bottom of the hill of Yerushalayim, and people would go up to Har Abayis to get there, then we may be able to find the pathway which links the two. What's the problem? Is if you look up from the Seal 1, at the bottom of Seal 1, it's all houses, a lot of them Arab, and a lot of them are Jewish, as you look up. So what do you do? And we know we're talking about under 15, 20 feet of earth, covered up from destruction upon destruction. So you know what they started doing in 2008? They started digging. And the first thing they did is they dug underneath the road. They found the sewage gutter underneath the road from the Shiloach till the Har Abayis, and it's not large. I'd say a few feet wide, and just enough to be able to walk in most places. It's beneath the road, and you can go and you can walk in the sewage channel underneath all the way up to Har Abayis. Amazing. And they used to say, above us, you used to be able to. That's where people used to walk. And they said, well, why are we talking about above us and not doing it? So they started digging the actual road itself. And they created award-winning arches, archaeologically award-winning arches, to support. They would essentially have to dig an inch and push the arch forward. Dig an inch, push the arch forward, because it was essentially housing above them. Creating a system of arches which took them 10 years to dig underneath the area of Seal 1 from the bottom of the valley all the way up to Har Abayis. They are almost 100% complete, this row of arches over here. And it is right now not open to the public, but I have to appreciate David Freeman helped me to get a chance to sneak in and see this. And you can now see the road of Aliyah L'Regel. You can actually see and walk on the stones, the flagstones, that our ancestors 2,000 years ago would walk. And when you want to understand how old the children are, we brought our children up those steps from the Shiloach to Yerushalayim, to the Har Abayis. You can do this. In fact, it is still an active area of archaeology, so there are buckets moving still now down, as because everything that is uncovered is history. In fact, they found on the side of this road, one of the most incredible finds was a paimon, a golden paimon, bell, sent to the bell for from the Kohen Gadol, right on this road. It is shocking. In fact, it's even more shocking. They've uncovered. They now have two rows of arches which are uncovered. Most of it, one row of arches all the way to the top. One which is now being excavated parallel to it, which is where the stores would stand. The stores would be on the side of the pathway up to Har Abayis, and in the stores you can find all kinds of fascinating things, including the fact that the stores were destroyed by the Romans. And they were broken in and covered by dirt. And what's fascinating is that in the dirt you can find the ashes and the charred wood covered, carbon dated back to the year 70 Common Era. You can touch the ash of the Roman that the Romans burnt of the stores on the way up to Har HaBayis. Just to appreciate what it looks like on the right-hand side of page 19, the Shiloach is found at the bottom of Yerushalayim there. On the rightmost side, there's a picture I took of the tunnels itself, looking down. It's hard to see how magnificent it looks because it's huge. The Shiloach is at the bottom. The pathway was the main highway. The main artery up to the Har HaBayis was from the Shiloach, a very wide road. Very, very wide. We only have the right-hand side of the road. There could be another three arches just to cover the entire road, how big it is. This is where the thousands upon thousands of Jews would do Aliyah LeRegel, from the gates of Yerushalayim all up to Har HaBayis, and it would wind its way up. It is the least steep way up, which makes sense. The stones are very long. There's short steps, so it's actually easy to access for the children, which is what we did. Here's the fascinating thing. So often... In the floor, there'll be a beautiful flower design with holes in it, which would be the drainage pipes, leading to the drainage pipe, which they uncovered first. That was the first thing they're doing. You can go into the drainage pipe. We walked for a bit of the way in the drainage pipe itself. They found something fascinating, which is actually now there. You can actually see pots, whole pots, which are kept underneath, which are kept in perspex. Right there, they found these in the drainage pipes. Now, usually when you lose something and down the drainage pipe, it's a coin, it's your phone charger, whatever it is, a contact lens. You don't usually use huge pots. Why were there pots there? The answer is in Josephus. If you read Josephus in the War of the Jews in Source 12, he describes how when the Romans first captured the city, it says, so they now left the towers of themselves, or rather they were ejected out of them by the God himself and fled immediately to that valley which was under Silwan, where they again recovered themselves out of the dread where they were for a while. So where did they hide? They hid, where the Jews hide? In the sewers themselves. Carries on Josephus in the next chapter. Now this vast multitude indeed collected out remote places, but the entire nation was now shut up by fate as in a prison, and the Roman army encompassed the city when it was crowded with inhabitants. Accordingly, the multitude of those that therein perished exceeded all the destructions that either man or God ever brought upon the world. For to speak only of what was publicly known, the Romans slew some of them. Some carried captives, and others they made search for underground. And when they found they were there, they broke up the ground and slew all they met with. What does it mean they broke up the ground? That means that they broke up the sewage system, which is where the Jews were hiding as the Romans destroyed it. And it is a very viable place to be. It actually is a lot of space. The last, I'd just like to close with the last most amazing thing. This is actually a picture I'd put on the page 20 of what it looks like to be in the gutter in the sewer channel underneath the road up to the Har HaBayis. If you look up on the right-hand side is what it looks like to look through the aperture, which is where the water would come down from the rain when the road was covered. And it also helps understand one last thing, and this is just a last perspective on this. The Mishnah in Baba Metzia tells us, or these quotes, the Brisa is quoted as saying, "Tanu Rabbanon, Even Toyen Hayasab Yerushalayim." There used to be a stone upon which people would make claims on. What kind of claims? Kol Misha Avdalay Aveda Nifne L'Sham, Kol Misha Moitzay Aveda Nifne L'Sham. It'd be the lost and found section, right? So what happened is, I lost my sweatshirt the last time I was up here in Yerushalayim on Sukkos. So now I'm coming back. Basically, did anybody see a sweatshirt? It was a medium. It was a Montana sweatshirt, right? So does anybody know this? So what would happen is everybody would come to the stone that was in Yerushalayim. Now, if I read this Mishnah a few years ago, I'd say, where's Yerushalayim? The old city. So I'd be looking around in the old city of Jerusalem for the stone. That wasn't Jerusalem. So why are you looking in there? You need to look in Yerushalayim, where the Oilei L'Regel will go. We just uncovered that. And yes, there's a stone. Actually, there's a picture of our whole family on it, in fact. On the last page, on page 21, there is a set of stairs with a large stone on the top of it. On the side of the road, it leads to nothing. There's no destruction around it. There's a large stone literally halfway up from the Me'er Shilach all the way to the Har HaBayis. On the side of the road, on the main thoroughfare, the main highway for Oilei Regel. Why was that there? The suggestion is that is, in fact, the Even Toyen. That is the Toyen. On the side of the road, you see those flagstones. That is the ramp and the stairs up to Yerushalayim. Folks, again, every time we go to Yerushalayim, every time we go to Israel, we're uncovering our perspective, like the Ramban did 800 years ago, we are doing today with a zechus we have to be living at such a time. I highly recommend everybody has the opportunity of going and taking advantage of themselves.